Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so hot and humid, not as much of a chance for showers as we'll have on Wednesday for both today and tomorrow. System out in the Atlantic, 50-50 shot at developing. It would be almost 2 weeks before it hits us, which somebody texted and reminded me would be around the 29th of August, but that's traditionally when we hit the peak of hurricane season. It's been quiet so far, so let's keep hoping. That's all we can do. Dane Cialino joins us now, professor of law at Loyola. Good morning, Dane. How are you?
Fine, Tommy. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm looking at this 44-page, I think it's 44-page indictment. Mayor Cantrell and Officer Vappi. You know, before I get your take on it, how uncommon is it to have pictures in an indictment, or is that common?
Yeah, that is a, well, relatively new thing, the last 5 or 6 years. So you certainly didn't see that 20 years ago, mm-hmm. but with everyone having cell phones and taking pictures of everything, federal prosecutors get that, and people love to see pictures, and, mm-hmm. and I think the pictures tell part of the government story here, and they are... And they're persuasive.
What I wanted to ask is not, I don't mean to dwell on this a lot, but back in the day, if you had mobsters meeting or something, would they have actual photographs included in the indictment or not?
No, okay. No. Even if the FBI was taking old film camera pictures mm-hmm. of mobsters going into some restaurant, those never appeared in an indictment.
So it's the technology. The technology that allows it?
Exactly.
I got
and in legal briefs, lawyers are putting pictures and excerpts of documents, and it's very common these days.
Okay. So when it comes to the indictment, your thoughts on what you read?
Well, I think nothing surprising here, actually. That's the biggest surprise, is that the government has waited more than a year after indicting Vappi and Farrell, and now almost a year later they're indicting Mayor Cantrell for virtually the same things that were raised in those indictments a year ago. Mm-hmm. So the biggest surprise to me is the delay, and I guess the question is why did the government indict them so quickly and took so long to indict her?
Is it a pretty solid case as you see this?
Well, every time you read an indictment, it sure seems solid mm-hmm. because that's the government's best case laid out with no response or ability to counteract any of the allegations from the defendant. But yeah, I mean, the evidence to me seems fairly compelling. And as you've already noted, there are pictures and quotes from various WhatsApp messages between Mayor Cantrell and Officer Vappi. They have all the payroll records, obviously, that show that Officer Vappi was paid over $70,000. For essentially private time with the mayor. So it when you're a criminal defense lawyer and you are defending a federal criminal matter, you've lost by the time it's gone to indictment typically. Mm-hmm. It's the rare case where a defendant is indicted in federal court and winds up beating the charges at trial.
So in this case, the defense attorneys would probably be more involved with coming to some type of settlement?
Well, that's always the case. There's always going to be a time for plea negotiations, and I'm sure there's already been discussions of that. And the mayor obviously was not interested in doing it on a pre-indictment basis. But, yeah, I mean, the feds no doubt are still going to try to flip Vappi, try to flip Farrell, and get testifying witnesses against her. But even without them, they've got plenty of evidence, pictures, documents, WhatsApp messages to make their case. And yeah, it's a case not only about underlying wrongdoing, misuse of city funds, but also the cover-up afterwards, which mm-hmm. is, as we always say, is almost yep. is sometimes worse than the underlying crime. And here the cover-up makes makes them both appear to be guilty.
Do you ever scratch your head sometimes, Dane, as a professor of law, and the fact that, you know, I'm just a dumb guy from the West Bank, and I know that it's the cover-up that gets you, that people still get themselves in trouble trying to cover it up when they don't realize that it'd be better just to fess up right away?
Well, it's human nature. Whether you're 5 years old and you're caught taking cookies in the kitchen, it's just human nature to try to not get punished for it. And that's what happened here. And but in today's world, back to modern technology, in today's world, everything is available on our phones, and it doesn't go away, even though we like to think it does. So and again, they knew this was coming. They have text WhatsApp messages where they're trying to talk about using WhatsApp for encrypted messages, and they did encrypt a lot of the messages, thousands and thousands of messages, according to the government's allegations. But there were some that were not encrypted, and that's going to the jury's going to hear about those.
Did they break down any that were encrypted, Dane? Do you know?
I don't believe so. But they've got talk or chatter on the unencrypted messages about how they need to switch over to encrypted messaging. So what the jury will never hear probably are those encrypted messages, and maybe just knowing there were thousands and thousands of them will itself be damning.
Yeah, let me take a break here. We'll pick it up when we come back, because I want to talk to you about what the jury will hear and what they won't if it does indeed go to trial. Dane Cialino is our guest, professor of law at Loyola, breaking down a legal angle of the mayor's indictment that happened on Friday evening, afternoon, 44 pages of it, 820, traffic now, WWL. 8:25 and a half, Tommy Tucker back with our friend Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola, walking us through the LaToya Cantrell and Paul Vappe indictment, Jeffrey Paul Vappe indictment. When it comes, Dane, to the indictment itself, and I don't want to hurt myself here talking about criminal procedure, but does the jury get to hear everything that the grand jury did, or do they get to read the indictment? Is everything in the indictment admissible?
Typically, the very first thing that's done in a criminal trial is that the indictment, which is the formal allegation of criminal wrongdoing, is read to the jury, and then the government proceeds with its evidence. The indictment, of course, is not evidence; it's just an allegation. But presumably the government has all the evidence underlying the allegations that it will present to the jury.
So somebody texted in, I think it is important, 44 pages of indictment. What at the end of it all is Mayor Cantrell charged with? What is Officer Vappe charged with?
They're both charged with conspiracy to commit wire fraud, and then a number of substantive counts of wire fraud, and then the obstruction-related charges, which include obstruction of justice, and then just straight-up lying to the FBI.
Jim Brown, former insurance commissioner, if I remember correctly, he went to jail, and people think it was about graft or this, that, the other thing. He went to jail for lying to an FBI agent, correct?
Yeah, and that's unusual. If you lie to an NOPD officer, that's not a crime, but Congress has made it a crime to make a false, unsworn statement to the FBI. And a number of people think that that shouldn't be a crime. It should be a crime only if it's if you're lying, but for example, before a grand jury under oath, that's perjury. But it is a crime, and both Mayor Cantrell and Officer Vappe have been charged with it.
And I'm not taking up for either one of them. That's not the point. But when it comes to being interviewed by an FBI agent, you can get in trouble just for kind of contradicting yourself, whether you're knowingly doing it or knowingly trying to lie or not, right?
Exactly. And the real problem is the FBI doesn't record those statements typically, and they won't let the defendant record those statements. So it's
based on notes, right? A 302
based on notes. And it's often becomes the he said, she said, as it did in the James Brown case, where he said, I didn't say those things to the agent. And the agent said, yes, you did. And of course, there are no recordings to prove who's right or wrong. And it just becomes a credibility question before the jury.
Is it they call it a 302 interview, is that it, where the FBI agent just takes notes? Or maybe
the 302 is the official FBI form that they use to record to memorialize what was said in a meeting.
Okay, let me talk about the timeline on all of this. I guess now they both have to be arraigned, and then from there, we set a trial date or what? Tell me how this plays out.
Yeah, they'll be arraigned before a magistrate judge in federal court. The magistrate judge, the matter's already been assigned to a district judge, Wendy Vitter. Then the court will set a trial date, and there'll be discovery where all of the evidence is turned over to the defendants. And nothing moves quickly, as we all know, although a trial date will probably be set something on the order of 3 to 5 months out. It's never going to happen. It almost never does. And I don't expect this case to go to trial until after Mayor Cantrell is long gone from City Hall.
Ironically, considering that this is based on travel, do you think they'll have to surrender their passports or not?
Typically, they do. I don't know whether in this case that'll be a condition of pretrial release or not. It probably shouldn't be. I don't think either one of them is a real international flight risk.
I don't think so either, but they have shown a proclivity to travel, right?
They have indeed.
Thank you, Dane. I appreciate it. Dane Cingolino, professor of law at Loyola. When we come back, we're going to talk to J.P. Morrell about Airbnbs and what's going on with them. We haven't spoken about this in a long time, but it has not gone away. We'll talk about what the current regulations say, what's currently happening with Airbnb listings, and more. Then, in 9 o'clock hour, we'll talk to Mae Scott, medical director and owner of Kronos Wellness. They're saying these GLP weight loss drugs could be the everything drug. What? We'll find out when we come back. WWL. 844, 16 till 9. We're back. Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by City Council member J.P. Morrell. How you doing, J.P.?
I'm good. How are you doing, Tommy?
I'm all right. Had a good weekend, did you?
Yeah, it was not eventful.
You cut your own grass or not?
No.
Man, it's good.
Good for you. I have allergies. I get hay fever if I cut my own grass.
That's one of those things I just can't bring myself to divest myself of, and I wish I could because, man, 5 hours is brutal. Let's talk about Airbnbs. I kind of lost track of this whole thing because I don't know where the rules are, what kicked in. Where do we stand now as far as Airbnbs in Orleans Parish, J.P.?
Well, the big development was on August 1st, platform accountability kicked in. Now, what platform accountability means is for years, what Airbnb would do in particular is if we would find an illegal Airbnb and we would tell Airbnb to shut it down, they would take it off their website only for the owner of the Airbnb to immediately relist it. What changed on August 1st is we changed the requirement that Airbnb has to check whether a permit is valid before listing the property. And once we did that via an electronic process, there has been an almost immediate purge of thousands of illegal Airbnbs because now that Airbnb is responsible and there's a fine and a threat of delisting their platform, they are the ones now in charge of making sure permits are valid. So people who have been listing them illegally for years are finding out very quickly at the corner of FAFO that once Airbnb has to pay the fine, they're refusing to list properties that don't have permits. And it's been pretty dramatic over the last couple of weeks.
Somebody texted in about Vrbo. I've been on
VRBO is owned by Expedia. Actually, Vrbo, Vacation Rental by Owner, they've actually been doing the purging themselves for years. So basically, when we tell VRBO that a listing's illegal, they take it off immediately and blacklist it. Airbnb was the bad actor that made us play whack-a-mole, and now the playing field's level because Airbnb, and the law works so well that the moment we filed the law, Tommy, they sued us. We're in federal court right now with Airbnb because they're trying to undo the law because they prefer to have as many properties listed as possible, even if they're illegal.
But the law went into effect while the suit is pending? Is that what's going on?
Correct. Well, the law was passed, I want to say, in May. We had to delay it for a couple of months to make sure on our end the technological pieces were in place. They sued to block the law. The court is still considering their suit. And since there was no stay, the law went into effect. But Airbnb hates this law because their goal is to be unregulated, and they'd prefer to have as many properties listed as possible, whether they're legal or not. So their lawsuit's still pending, but since they got no stay from the court, our law is in effect currently.
I'm going to do a quick survey here with the Oakland Art Jeweler talk and text line at 504-260-1870. Don't ever text and drive. Do you prefer hotels or Airbnbs or Vrbo's or whatever it is? JP, when you travel, do you have a preference or not?
I prefer hotels.
Well, just for me,
you get a consistent experience. And though for years we would try and do both just because we have, it's two parents and three kids, mm-hmm. the hotel offerings as of late, as you know, hotels are trying to compete with Airbnb. So they're providing more like double rooms mm-hmm. or more like rooms that are more accommodating for families. And
right.
that's my preference just because I know what I'm getting.
I know every time I've ever stayed in one, my kid likes to book these things and, you know, okay. But either something doesn't work or it's not what you expected. I have never, ever been satisfied. But look, I'm not trashing the whole thing. I'm just saying that's my personal preference.
The thing that really started to bother me a couple of years back when I stopped was they'd had that laundry list of chores you had to do before you left, and I was kind of like, I didn't go from my house.
Exactly. That's exactly
that's
right.
That's always been weird to me.
Do a load of laundry, mop the floor, paint the house, and also reseed the lawn when you leave. And I'm not going to do that. Thank you, JP, for bringing that up. I'd forgotten about that. That's another one where it's like, and then, you know, with the rating each other, everybody's terrified of saying, no, you can't complain about the thing because then they'll blacklist you as a renter and all. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? You're paying to rent. Anyway, so let me take a break for traffic. When we come back, I'm going to talk about what the law says in terms of who can have an Airbnb. How do you make it? How do you get listed? How do you get a license, right?
Right.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we come back. JP Morrell, our guest. Text me at 504-260-1870. A quick tummy tucker survey. No texting and driving. Do you prefer Airbnbs, Vrbo, whatever it is, or a hotel when you travel? 850, 10 till 9, traffic now, WWL.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
8:55 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member, about Airbnbs. And my quick survey, highly unscientific, but it shows about half and half, J.P., half Airbnb, half hotel. But somebody said, if I'm staying in a city, hotel is the way to go. If I'm on the outskirts, Airbnb is more bang for your buck. And I guess depending on how outskirts you are, it might be your only choice. Let's talk about, pardon me, in New Orleans Parish, who can be licensed to have an Airbnb? I see Tony McCauley's story here from NOLA.com. Got pictures of the 1400 block of Carondelet Street. The homes were recently built, and they're being used as short-term rentals. Thoughts?
Right. So after the ordinances we passed about 2 years ago, it is right now it is one Airbnb per square block. That's the entire circular block. If more than one wants an Airbnb, there is a lottery process annually. The exception process, the two plus the one, has been ended, so there's no more exceptions. Mm-hmm. And as far as commercial Airbnbs, those are currently banned. New ones are currently banned under an interim zoning district while the City Planning Commission studies commercial Airbnbs. So right now, the only people that could theoretically get one is someone who wants to do an Airbnb on a block where one does not already exist. And if more than one person wants an Airbnb on said block, there has to be a lottery.
So when you say commercial, that's like if you built five houses in a row with plans to have
if you have a commercial property. It could be where apartments are. It could be a fourplex, could be a fiveplex where you have a mix of residential and commercial properties and it's zoned commercial. Yeah. Theoretically, you could zone one of those as a commercial short-term rental. But right now, we have an IZD in place because we have paused new commercial short-term rentals. while the City Planning Commission is doing an extensive study to see how we're going to deal with transient lodging going forward generally, to really create a process on how we can regulate them or if they can be regulated. There's always the possibility that the CPC may come back and say, we don't need any more commercial rentals. The market's already saturated. We'll just not have any more at all.
So I see them in Algiers. I see them all over the city where you can see, because it's like they're next to next to next. And you know from the way they're built, it's a short-term rental. You just do. So for those people that have three of them, it's more than one in a block.
Well, Tommy, the thing is this. So if it's residential, then it would be very, very rare to have three on a block, because the entire square block, under the worst-case scenario, the entire circular block, could only have three. There are some commercial short-term rentals that predate our original legislation from 2 years ago.
Grandfathered in.
That could have been grandfathered in under the old council scheme. Those somewhat still exist, but they're the exception, not the rule. For the most part, what you're seeing more in the last 2 months, believe it or not, from the real estate market, is a tremendous amount of properties going back on the market as people who have let their permits expire find out they can't get new ones. I mean, if you go through the Bywater in particular, the Upper Ninth Ward, parts of Mid-City, there's more property on the market because an out-of-town owner realized that he let his permit lapse and there's no way to get a new one, and they just dump it back on the market.
You think this will help with housing costs in the city?
I think in the short term it'll provide some relief, but Airbnbs are like one of 10 problems with affordable housing. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the problems, but it's not the silver bullet.
Thank you, JP. Appreciate your time as always. I know Leslie Harris is very concerned with that as well. A lot of city council members are. JP Morrell, New Orleans city council member. We're going to take a break. We come back. We're going to spend an hour talking to Dr. Mace Scott, medical director, owner of Kronos Wellness. This story is talking about GLP-1s, the weight loss drugs, could be an everything drug to treat Alzheimer's disease, to treat all kinds of different diseases. Is it the miracle? Sleep apnea, seizures, bacterial infection? Addictions? We'll talk about it when we come back on WWL.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.